Here's another interview featured on Serotalk. To hear more great content like this, visit www.serotalk.com or find us on iBlink Radio via the Apple App Store or the Android Market.
I'm joined today by Mike Calvo, Lisa Salinger, and Patrick Perdue. This is the fourth of our four-part series on the MacBook Air, and today we are going to compare the MacBook Air and the iPad. So welcome all to the Serotalk Weekly Podcast. Glad to have you guys along.
Hello.
Good evening.
Hello.
Or good day.
Whatever it is.
Well, that's my default thing to say is good evening, no matter what the time is. So there you go. Works.
You're just one of those musician, like, engineer dudes that, like, sleeps during the day and comes out at night.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Surprised we got you today.
So, Mike, you're out on the road. You travel a lot. If you could only have one device, which would it be? Would it be the MacBook Air or the iPad?
Boy. You know, that's where I started with this thing, because they are similar in size. In fact, they're actually, the iPad in some respects may be a little thicker than the MacBook Air. But for all intents and purposes, and for the sake of this discussion, they're both the same size, with the exception of the battery. And we covered that in our last episode, which I don't believe that battery is all that important when you look at the pros and the cons of the two devices. Also, the other thing that you would look at with the iPad, of course, is the built-in 3G if you have it. So that's also a deciding factor. But again, because I can do a hotspot on my phone, you know, do I really need to bring the iPad that's always connected? No. And as we're going to learn today through our series of questions, I've come to the conclusion that the MacBook Air is still, for a blind person, and I want to underscore that. For a blind person, I think that the MacBook Air is still a more productive tool when traveling, when on the road, just overall. And the reason is because I think for sighted people, Apple has really gone out of its way to make sure that this is an alternative to a netbook, an alternative to a laptop for a sighted person. And I'm not slighting Apple at all because of things like Pages not being totally accessible on the iPad. I understand that everything takes its time, and we'll get it eventually. But the fact that you can't produce everything on the iPad the same as you can on the MacBook Air or on a computer, basically, really just makes it more of an entertainment device for me when I'm on the road. And quite candidly, I get that out of an iPhone. For me, the screen size as a blind person doesn't really matter.
Right.
So why bother? You know, I've got a 32 gig iPhone 4S sitting in my pocket that if I really need to do iOS type stuff, I can do it on there, and there's no compelling reason. That being said, I did perform my tests with an iPad 2 with a leather case, the Sina leather Bluetooth case, you know, blue case with Bluetooth keyboard. And it's a great case. I love it. It's beautiful to look at. It smells nice because, of course, it's leather.
Absolutely.
And it's a great companion. And if you're really just going to be doing notes and email and, just maybe kind of some primitive document production or creativity, then by all means, do the iPad. But if you really want to be able to be ready for anything, and if this is the only device, as you said in your intro here, that I would take, I couldn't. I'd have to leave the iPad at home. Now, we do have a group of people here that may or may not agree with me, so I'll leave it to you guys and give it back to you, Jamie, so you can tell us where you want to take it.
Lisa, have you had a chance to play with an iPad?
I did, and my feeling is similar to Mike's, although sort of for a different reason. The advantage of an iPad for someone who's sighted is it has a larger screen than the iPhone or the iPod Touch, so there is more screen real estate. And it is exactly that thing that makes it harder for a blind person to use. Now, I'm not saying you can't. I know of blind people Right. who are using iPads successfully, both with and without keyboards. So if I, for example, want to, if I'm moving apps around, I had a little bit of a disaster with an iPhone, and I've got 11 pages of apps that I'm organizing back into folders. So that's kind of currently on my mind. But if I'm moving an app and I want to move it to the second row of the second column, and let's say I'm already in the second row, because I have farther to move to get to that second column, chances are that with a larger screen, I will veer. And that makes a difference if you're trying to type, if you're trying to do anything with any speed.
You do understand that some people will argue with that, Lisa, and say, well, yeah, but because you have more real estate, you know, you get more of a spatial view of a web page. You can touch the upper right-hand corner if you're being led through and somebody says, oh, you know, you go along the left-hand side on the nav bar, you know, you can touch over there and find your place. And also, you know, if you're holding your iPad the right way, you should be able to just lay your fingers down and type on it. So it's, I think it's one of those subjective things that
yes, very, you know, much, very much. And if you're, let's say, a guy and you've got, you know, great big
fingers,
hands, you might find that the iPhone is not enough space. And actually, when I was playing with the iPad, I thought, I would love to try this. I bet if you got good enough, you could just lay your fingers down and touch type.
That's what Ricky does.
So really, it is subjective.
Yeah, Ricky can type. I mean, I've never seen anybody faster than Ricky Enger on an iPhone. That woman can type. I mean, seriously, like I'm sure she can do 40, 45 words a minute on that thing, which is, for a blind person who's feeling their way around, that's kind of creepy on a flat screen.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool. Well, then there's the whole thumbs versus index fingers discussion, and
yeah,
that would be an interesting, like, iPhone input tips, something, but it is very subjective. And yeah,
okay, so you decided then that for you personally, you decided to get a MacBook Air. Patrick, do you, we don't want to leave you out of the discussion. If you had a chance to play with an iPad?
I did play pretty extensively with an iPad 1. And I guess just, you know, based on speed, the 2 is pretty, you know, going to be a bit more responsive, but I didn't really have access to one of those. But,
Same thing, just thinner.
Yeah, it is thinner. The first time I saw one, I thought, "Oh, paper, yeah. Neat. I wonder if it could bend. Not blend, not like the BlendTech people, but can it bend?" But my first thought was, and I agree with both of you on different aspects of this, because my first thought was, "Oh, wow, there's all this real estate." That kind of made web browsing kind of nicer. You know, when you have things in columns, that was nicer to do on the big screen. It kind of messed me up at first because I'm not used to having all this room. So I was looking for things where they should have been, according to me using an iPhone for a while.
Yes.
And they weren't there. They were further off to one side or the other. And also, it's easier to type on than a phone. Well, for me anyway, it is. I'm not a very fast typer on a touchscreen, or at least on the iPhone. But I actually played with an iPad for the sole purpose of testing one app. I was actually going to bank, you know, buying an iPad or not on one app that I really, really wanted to use that was, you know, a full screen thing, didn't work on the phone. You had to have an iPad, and it was inaccessible, so I didn't buy one. But, you know, I would have.
What was the app?
The app was actually a piece of software that controls my digital mixer. It's actually a virtual interface to this. I have a 16-channel digital mixer here in the studio, and it's a virtual interface to that board. With every single control that the real hardware unit offers, and it actually controls it. And that would have done it for me. I would have actually gone out and spent all that money just to have a remote control, basically.
I'll tell you a sad story very similar to that. And when I went through this test process, I said, okay, Calvo, what do you need to do when you're out on the road? And I do a couple of things. I do some audio production stuff, both for Serotech in certain places, but for other production work that I do. So I need access to production tools. Well, GarageBand and just about anything else that is a production quality type of thing for the iPad is inaccessible, which really is sad because I have an Alesis dock sitting right here for the iPad. I have one sitting right here in the studio that I'd love to review, but even GarageBand isn't accessible on the iPad. And neither is, I have not found any product that I can use on an iPad with this Alesis device.
I wonder if actually there's a CMI Fairlight emulator that might be interesting to play with for you, but yeah.
Yeah, so, but then, you know, but in my testing, I couldn't find anything, and cool, you got to send me a link on that. But so then the next thing I said, well, okay, can't do any audio production. And so next would be email. Well, email is okay for me on the iPad and on iOS devices, and especially now with Siri on the phone, it's just amazing. And I got to believe that Apple's going to bring Siri to all of its platforms, including the OS, ultimately. But, you know, I said, okay, I still feel much more comfortable using SAMNet email through the web interface, through our web interface on the computer, even on the Lion, or just using Outlook or whatever. So that there wasn't a compelling enough reason in the email area to keep the iPad right. as my exclusive tool. And I said, well, how about letters? You know, if I need to write a letter, if I need to do a memo, if I need to look at a spreadsheet for, you know, from the accounting people or for whatever, for a meeting. I mean, in my job, I could write letters, I could do spreadsheets, I could read spreadsheets or create them. Again, there is not a compelling reason to do this on the iPad. So quite honestly, even things like Netflix and ABC Player and things of that nature are barely accessible on this device. So even as a content device, it just doesn't make sense. I can get that stuff on my iPhone. On the MacBook Air, I found that I can run Windows on there, whether it be through VMware. Or whether it be on Bootcamp, I can run it and I can run Lion. And that's an important thing for me because I believe that you can run Windows on a Mac, but you can't run Mac on anything else. And as a blind consumer, I would like to continue to buy from Apple because they have met my needs. So that's kind of where I am and why, in a nutshell, I guess, I like the MacBook Air. And in particular, I found that this one version, and I know, Lisa, you bought the same configuration, and Patrick, you ordered the configuration that I have here, and it's an awesome, awesome, awesome device.
It is. And, you know, in a previous segment, you were talking about blind people and all the stuff that we carry with us. It's my own personal feeling that if you're going to use an iPad, unless you get really good at touch typing on it, that you would need to carry a Bluetooth keyboard, which is just another piece of it, another thing to carry. And the other thing I was thinking as we're talking is, you know, all of us have come at this iPad angle from the standpoint of being an iPhone user or an iPod Touch user previously. And that was my big thing when I went to use it. It was, well, this isn't like the iPhone. I mean, it was until I got into the App Store and, ooh, I was lost. But in one sense, I think if someone's productivity needs are not as intense, it's conceivable that the learning curve could be a little less with an iPad, but still.
Agreed, yeah.
I think if you can't see, it's, you know, if you have no usable vision, you're just as well off. You know, even if you have a phone from somebody else that you love, you're just as well off with an iPod Touch.
Yeah, but well, no, if you've got one device, if you're going to get an iOS device, I mean, you're probably, the iPad is probably the way to go just because it is so versatile and it does have peripherals that you can put it into and all that good stuff. So, you know, if you're not in the Apple ecosystem where you don't own a bunch of other Apple stuff, the iPad, I think, would be a nice single device, in my opinion. I mean, I see where the iPod Touch is nice because it does the same things. But then again, on a learning curve basis, you face those challenges that you mentioned a second ago, Lisa. And that's where, the iPad is easier to learn.
Now, I'm curious as to why you don't say an iPhone. Are you assuming that they would have a different phone than Mike?
Yeah, I'm assuming that people are going to, you know, if they don't get an iPhone, it's because, you know, either they're using an Android phone usually because or a Symbian right. phone of some kind or something. They've already got their phone needs met. And perhaps they've decided, well, I'm going to dip my toe into this Apple world and see what it is. But I don't, you know, and the iPhone, really, I mean, let's be for real. The iPhone is expensive. It's a monthly yes. expense of $100 at least, you know, and not every blind person out there can afford, you know, the luxury of $100 a month phone bill. Conversely, neither can a lot of sighted folks. It has nothing to do with blindness. It just has to do with the economic condition of this country right now. You know, $100 is a lot of money to spend. I can justify the cost, of course, because of productivity. But if I didn't require it, I'd have to think twice about if I really need a smartphone and the very expensive smartphone plan that goes with it.
Now, you're talking about a lot of data, right? Because, I mean, you can get data plans for $30, but those are small, right?
Well, no. But even if you're putting a data plan, I mean, just with Sprint, for example, I'm with Sprint now. And
okay, you're talking about the whole bill.
Yeah, it's $90 just for $90 just for the plan with the data, and then there's another $30 or $40 in taxes that they, you know, jam up on top of that. You're paying $120 for this device. So that's why I'm saying the iPad, because the iPad can give you 3G, which you can turn on and off at will. You know, you can use it for a month. You can use it if you don't. You know, it is truly the best of all worlds in the Apple experience for somebody who doesn't have anything else and is just looking to kind of play with an iOS device.
Another thing, you did bring up an interesting point. If you start out with an iPad, because of the, you know, the larger screen and the bigger real estate, once you get used to the iPad, you can use any kind of layout like that. It might be a bit smaller, but you'll basically know what it does. Whereas if you come from a phone, you might be a little bit more confused, or, you know, from an iPod Touch, you might be a bit confused by the larger real estate brought to you by the iPad.
That's true. And you can, and you know, to take that to, I guess, to its logical conclusion with that, I mean, Apple has done everything like the tragic Mac pad.
Oh yeah, I like mine.
The magic trackpad is awesome for the desktop. You know, all of it is the same. So you can pretty much, once you learn the gestures and everything on one platform, that's the beauty of the whole ecosystem. So you're right. Once you can transfer all your knowledge from this iPad to everything else, and it's easier to go from big to small as opposed to start small and then work your way up to big, because you just have a better. I remember when I first got my iPhone, dude, I want to throw that thing through the window.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah,
for right. About an hour.
You know, I think everyone had that experience with their first iOS device. It is such a paradigm shift. It definitely. Really is.
But yet, when I got the MacBook Air, and I've had mine now for about 2 weeks, I guess, when I got it and found the trackpad and turned it on, it kind of felt a little less foreign. It's like, oh, I've been here. This is familiar.
So how was that for you, Lisa? I mean, it took you a little bit to get Windows up and running on that machine, if I remember right. So how was it for you dealing with just the Mac side of things, just the lion side? When, I mean, you got your new toy, you took it out, you know, you listened to these reviews, you're like, okay, I'm excited, I got my new toy. What was that like? You know, the out of box, the and then ultimately the transfer of information. I'm assuming you've installed Windows. I didn't ask you before, so I'm assuming you did, but you
no,
might
I did.
Have.
I started using it for work yesterday, and well, let me back up. So when I first took it out, I was really kind of in awe. My first thought was, wow, he wasn't kidding. It really is small and light and neat looking. And
pretty.
Yeah.
Pretty.
But then I opened it up and I thought, okay, now which one is the power button? And this is one of those, I'm kind of an ergonomics nerd. This is one of those things I would change if I had the choice. There was a row of long buttons along the top, and from left to right, they are escape, the F1 through F12 keys, and the power button. And it would be nice if, let's say, if I'm in Windows and I want to do an Alt F4, it would be nice not to have to count 1, 2, 3, 4, but there are no spaces in between. There's not really enough room, either on the key or near the keys, to mark, like, every fourth key. So that's something I would change. The other thing is, my previous experience with a small computer was on a netbook. And if you're listening to this and you're a guy and you hate netbooks because the keyboards are too little, you really might find this more to your liking. I find that sometimes I'm typing a 2 instead of a 1 because I'm not reaching far enough over because the keys are larger. I found that the setup was very, well, it was fairly easy, fairly self-explanatory, except that it asked for a password and it sometimes will click every time you enter a key. And sometimes it does not, and I'm not sure if that is a bug or a random, like a security feature that it's randomized like that. But
it is by design. I've asked. It is by design. They don't want somebody to be able to sit next to you and listen to how many clicks it takes.
Right. When I was trying to type in my password, I'm thinking, okay, did it not get that? Did I not type that letter? So that was a little kind of nerve-wracking, but, you know, the rest of the setup was pretty self-explanatory. Using it was and still is a bit of a challenge. I would not say, because people have asked me, well, is it easier or harder than Windows? And it's not. It's just different. It's a different way of thinking. It's a different way of doing.
I want to, because that is so true. I mean, it is a completely different OS, but I'd like to go to Mike for just a second, if we can, because that brings up a really good point, which is, since the introduction of Lion, there's been a lot of discussion of perhaps lessened productivity. And Mike, I know that you have some opinions about that. You mentioned them, I believe it was in MacBook Air Part 1. You made the statement that Lion was less productive, and then you weren't really able to elaborate on that.
I have never found the Mac operating system, whether it be Lion or Leopard, productive for me. Okay. And I'm not saying, right. I don't want to paint with a broad brush and say, oh, it stinks, it's not productive. I don't believe that. I believe that everything has a choice for everybody. You know, everybody has a choice as to what they're going to use. And for me, I have never found it to be compelling and productive. What I'm waiting for, and I know that this is coming, is ultimately the merger of iOS and Lion, or whatever it'll be when they merge.
Right.
And I will be able to use my MacBook Air the same way I use an iPod or an iPad or an iPhone, but with the strength of a computer behind it, with all the, you know, the cool stuff that comes along with using an accessible version of, you know, of iWork. You know, so I don't use the Mac at all on the Mac side when I want to get work done, which is why I'm so interested in what these guys have to say. Now, in the studio, that's a different story. You know, I use the Mac over here. I use GarageBand, you know, and I'm getting ready to start dabbling into Pro Tools because I hear it's a lot more accessible now. I had a nice conversation with Kevin Reeves, who's a big advocate of Pro Tools, about a week ago, and he suggested that I should really give it a shot. So I'm slowly, cautiously moving into that realm, but I don't use it. I am not a Mac person in that respect. That being said, though, I love the hardware, and I think it's so freaking cool that it works with both platforms. And I just get disgusted every time I see these Ultrabooks trying to copy. I mean, if you're going to go buy a friggin' Ultrabook, people, go buy a MacBook Air, for heaven's sakes. Sorry. So that, I hope I answered that properly.
Patrick, you have used, obviously, both Mac and Windows. What are your thoughts as far as productivity on the Mac?
Well, I agree with Mike, although I'm coming at it from a different angle. I'm really more of an audio guy. I don't do a lot of the typical sort of office productivity type stuff. In fact, I do as little of that as I can get away with, which is actually quite a lot. So I use a program called Reaper to edit this podcast and many other things. And it's a multi-track DAW, and there's a Mac and a Windows version. And my thought was, of course, I use it in Windows. Let's try it in Mac. There was an accessible Mac version that came out. Version 4.0 is now basically accessible with VoiceOver. Only problem is it's not very efficient to use it. Everything's there, but it's not laid out in a logical way, so I can't really get my work done that way, which I would like to do. I actually do find myself using Mac for sort of everyday things, email, Twitter, web surfing sometimes, you know, just stuff like that. But if I really want to get any work done, it's definitely been Windows. And at this point, I don't have a MacBook Air. I ordered mine. It's coming. But I was using a MacBook Pro, and now I have a Mac Mini. And one thing I do have to say is that when you transfer from one Mac to another, the migration process is really awesome. I kind of wish it was that smooth on Windows. Porting all your stuff from one Mac to another is really a nice experience.
I have more to add about that. You know, part of this goes back to why did I get a MacBook Air? Because, I mean, I have my iPhone, but I've never used any other Apple products. So my only experience was with iOS. And so it seemed like it was getting more popular, and I wanted to learn kind of the world of Apple so that I was better informed. And I've kind of decided that my way of looking at this is going to be that if a Mac app is already included and it's free, you know, so in other words, if it's kind of on equal footing with Windows, that I'm going to try it and see, give it a fair shot and see, can I really do this? I do know that as of right now, I'm liking Mac Mail a lot better than Outlook. And so, for example, with work, I've got Windows open running VMware Fusion, and then I have Mac Mail open. So that so far is working really well for me. I can't say really about many other products. You know, well, I like this better, I like that better. I am using a Twitter client for the Mac that I really like, given the fact that Twitter may or may not be developed further. I found that this is a very good, very acceptable alternative.
Now, are you referring to Yurafukuru? Because that's one of the popular ones.
The Japanese swear word Twitter client.
Are you a Fukuru? Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, in visiting with a lot of people who use the Mac and Windows, and you will find diehard people in both camps. Some people use only the Mac, some people use only Windows. But in visiting with a lot of different people who use both, I hear that very consistently that that mail and Twitter, and even in some cases, web browsing is very pleasant. But when it comes to productivity, office, spreadsheets, that sort of thing, the majority of people I talk to go back to Windows for that sort of work.
And I think it's great if we can have it all, if we can have all that functionality on one computer, because part of my productivity is email. And if I can get through it faster and more simply with Mac Mail, great. And, you know, Mike mentioned in the first segment that initially Apple or the Mac was this sort of product that just sat there and looked pretty. And they have addressed user needs. And hopefully, as they're hearing this more and more, they will address the productivity, the office productivity end of things.
I'll say, you know, this is something that maybe it's elementary to somebody who uses every aspect of their iPhone. But I got to believe that a company that takes the time to vocalize how many faces are visible in the camera app on a cell phone so that a blind person can enjoy taking pictures like anybody else. Such a mundane, seemingly trivial thing as that just will ultimately fix whatever is wrong. As long as we advocate properly, as long as we're patient and don't become these pissy, whiny, moany, bitching blind people that we all have at some point or another, including myself, have had the tendency to be when we don't feel that we're being addressed. I think that Apple does care about us as a consumer group. I think Apple has demonstrated that beyond a shadow of a doubt in my thinking. It's this what they've done and the attention to detail they've paid in accessibility for us as a community goes far and beyond any kind of legal qualification that may have been put on them or, you know, any kind of legal thing that has been put on them from lawsuits or, you know, or threatened lawsuits or whatever from any of the, quote, consumer groups, end quote. So I have no fear in the fact that in saying pretty staunchly and pretty loudly that I know that Apple will ultimately fix whatever is not working properly, which is why I will continue to be a very satisfied and happy Apple customer. I will continue to advocate for it, and I will continue to encourage others to purchase this product and any other product that Apple deems to put out because they continue to enhance accessibility. The latest Apple TV now, out of the box, you know, you can walk up to anybody's Apple TV and triple click, I believe it's triple click the play button on the remote control and it'll immediately bring up VoiceOver. You know, this is the kind of thing that my wife now, you know, just hands me her iPhone when she doesn't understand how to do something. And I don't know about you guys, but you know how cool it is when you can just like fix something for your wife and she's like, honey, can you fix
this? Been there, done that. It's awesome.
Just, sure, babe, I can do that. And, you know, here you go. And then you fix it and hand it back and that's it, you know, and you, oh, thank you. You know, that is just worth, it's priceless to me.
My wife doesn't need iCloud because I have been iCloud for her since she's owned her devices. So before we wrap up, and we've had a great discussion, let's kind of give everyone a chance to talk about accessories a little bit. Anything that maybe you found as far as cases or any other storage options that you'd like to talk about. Lisa, let's start with you.
Well, as far as, first of all, general accessories, I definitely like the sounds of the hard drive that Mike reviewed, and I'm hoping to get that soon. I also find that as I'm using this, it would really be helpful for me to have a USB card reader of some kind because I'm for the Victor stream, etc. I'm popping the USB card in and out all the time. But the main thing was I looked at cases, and the one in particular that Mike reviewed sounded wonderful, but I was looking for something a little more in my price range. I don't travel as much, so I don't need as rugged a case, perhaps. Mike, when you said that cases were designed for fashion over function, wow, you really were not kidding. I think I looked through something along the lines of 120 thereabouts cases on Amazon, and they have everything from little decorative skins that go over it to make it look pretty to the neoprene sleeves, which are nice, but I wanted something that was that I could, if I needed to carry it by itself, that I could. And they had cases that looked like books, and I thought, yeah, and heaven help you if you get caught in the rain, you know, because the sides weren't protected. But what I found was a case by a company called Roo Case, R-O-O, and it basically looks like a laptop case. There were some things that I really liked and some things I really didn't like about it. It has a shoulder strap and it has two handles. And I really liked the handles especially because I thought, I don't know, I just liked the way they felt in my hand. And I thought, you know, these would not be too small for a man, I don't think, or too big for a woman. They were just nice, perfectly sized, sturdy handles.
And you could slap somebody with your MacBook Air.
Self-defense.
Using the handle, you know, you just grab it in your hand and you just put your arm back and whap.
I suppose you could. See, this is where we get into creative uses of technology.
Something she hadn't considered, I don't think.
The inside is padded. It looks like a standard laptop case. You slide the MacBook Air in and there's a little Velcro closure. This is more, for lack of a better description, I would describe as a briefcase kind of fit. It's not one of those bags. I'm really good at this. You get a bag and you just stuff it full of stuff every corner. It's just not made that way. It's not going to bulge well. It's not going to look nice. It's not really going to allow for it. You can put the Mac adapter in it. There are some pockets on the front that are covered, and there is a place for a cell phone. It fits the iPhone perfectly, so if you have a large, bulky case, you might be out of luck. The thing that kind of surprised me is there's a place on the front for an MP3 player. Since it's designed in part for the MacBook, I was surprised that they didn't make that a little bit larger, because it will not fit the iPhone
or, that's interesting.
For example, the iPod Touch. Yes, it is. It's nice because there's a really nice little magnetic flap on the front so that you could access it easily. And there's a headphone port. I think that's going to be where my tissues are stored because, you know, it just is not quite big enough. However, having said that, it's really nice because there's room for that pocket. And then on the inside next to it, they have the pocket for your cell phone. And then to the right of that is like a little utility pocket, a place for pens. So they definitely thought about that aspect of the design so that everything fits in there very smoothly, very kind of flat. As with the bag that Mike described, if you're carrying a lot of extra stuff, if you want, you know, your MacBook Air and your phone and your, you know, some papers and keys and a water bottle and the dog's toy and whatever, this is
not all gonna
probably
fit on
not
that.
For you, but it's right. A nice little case. And I should have mentioned before, yeah, I paid about $35 for it. So if you're not going to be traveling a lot, it's not, for example, the Waterfield Designs case, which I've thought, you know, that sounds really, really nice. But if you're not doing a lot of traveling, it's certainly adequate for my needs.
And of course, you can find links to all of these resources in the show notes. We always link to the Amazon links, and you can go right from the show notes to these different accessories. Patrick, what are you looking at?
Well, when I just recently ordered the MacBook Air a couple of days ago, as of this recording, And I, of course, heard the reviews. I had to, for obvious reasons, heard the reviews that...
You were forced to.
I was.
Many times,
rant
actually.
And rave and make sense out of me through the power of editing.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. But so I heard the reviews that that Mike posted about the various cases, and I'm probably going to go with the Waterfield design case. That having been said, though, I need something a little bit bigger than 640 gigs. I have a 640 gig external hard drive already. I don't like it. It's a Western Digital Scorpio in a box. The thing I really hate about that drive is that it's stingy about power. If you leave it sitting for 25 seconds, it turns off. It's really annoying, because if you want to access it, you know, the whole machine kind of hangs when you try to access something on the drive. So I've decided not to buy any more of those particular drives. What I'm looking at, though, and actually what I just bought, is a Toshiba Canvio 1TB drive. It was only $99, and it's a little, I think it's an aluminum case. It's USB 2.0, so it's not going to be maybe as fast as the case or the drive that Mike mentioned. And I'm not going to tell anyone not to buy that drive. I've seen it. It looks beautiful. It's if there was a, I didn't see a 1TB version of it. If there was one, I probably would have bought it. You know, it's probably the best bang for your money for what you get and for how it looks. But I just needed a little bit more space, and so that's what I ultimately went with for that. And I also bought the inverter. The $43 Duracell inverter for it.
Okay. Mike, is there anything else in the way of accessories that we haven't talked about that you want to cover?
No. You know, one of the things that I'd like to do, and I just haven't gotten around to it, is playing with the Bluetooth on it and seeing if I can pair it with my Bluetooth headset just for fun. The camera on it is real nice. You can use it for Skype. I found that this machine... is going to be with me until it doesn't work anymore. It right. really is a very, very useful machine, and I can't say enough about it. I use it every day, even just around the house or whatever, and that used to not be the case with any other laptop I've had. This is truly a pleasure to use, and I'm excited about it. It's a great balance between price, power, and productivity for me.
I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. It's been a lot of fun. We've talked about a lot of different topics. I would especially like to thank Corey Martin for an excellent email that he sent us that provided a lot of food for thought on this topic. I'd like to encourage everyone listening to go to the website, check out the show notes, and listen to all four parts of the series. There's a lot there, and I think you can begin to get the big picture of what we've been talking about regarding the MacBook Air. You've been listening to the fourth of a four-part series on the MacBook Air here on the Serotalk Podcast Network.
If you found this review useful, or if you wish to contribute your own review, let us know by sending an email to resources@serotalk.com. Send us a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. Or send us an iReport on iBlink Radio.